Alrighty, welcome back to another episode of Justify Your Existence. I'm your host, Brendan Farrell. Today, I am joined by James Murphy, who also works here at the Journal with me. James, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me back on.
Yeah, no problem. So it's summertime, and I don't want to like call this a formal series. This is more of an experiment, and maybe we'll continue doing this. But, you know, it's summer and nothing happens during the summer. And so, but we still have a podcast to record. So my thought was, let's watch some football games until it's football season. And today I have selected Ole Miss LSU from this year. So, yeah, that's what we're going to roll with. Before we get started, here's your obligatory plugs. You can follow me on Twitter at bferrell727. You can follow James on Twitter at jsmurphymedia. And you can find all of our coverage at djournal.com. So, James, I think this is actually kind of an interesting game for you to go back and watch because I believe you were a little busy at the time.
Yep, I was at Mississippi State, Alabama. Battle between a team that was on its way to the college football playoff and one that was about a month or so away from firing its head coach.
Yeah, so, you know, I think you guys were waiting on this game to finish, right?
Yes, we were because it was on ESPN, and it was one of those things where they needed that to finish in order for the other game to start. I believe the game was pushed back. It's tough to say. I don't know if I can remember exactly, but it was pushed back to maybe about a half hour, somewhere in that ballpark, but we were waiting for a while.
Because you got exclusively night games this year. So.
Yes, I did. Even on that road trip to Auburn.
So was this your first time actually like watching through this game?
From start to finish, more or less, yes. So I had only seen highlights from the end. And for the first 55 minutes, I was going off of Michael Katz's bonkers tweets, which, you know, they only could be bonkers with the way the game was going.
Yeah, so what'd you think?
Well, tons of NFL talent on that field. Both have, whether you count the ones that have since left or the ones that are coming back for another year of college. To me, we can go on about the stats of the game. We can go on about the schematics. And there's plenty to do if we go down that road. To me, the biggest thing is just what it meant for Ole Miss to win that game. It went without saying, and it was probably the biggest narrative that it was not only the biggest win of the season for Ole Miss up to that point, and frankly the entire season, but it was a defining win in the Lane Kiffin era at Oxford, and just his ability to win a big game against a talented team that a lot of people tapped to go to the national championship, and a few tapped to win it, and they had a lot of right to back then. Just to be able to do that, even when it seemed like LSU's offense couldn't be stopped. And it almost wasn't stopped. If you look at that last drive, you could argue maybe they stopped themselves. But look, it was a really defining win for that. And to me, I think the momentum from that win is something that has since carried over really up until now. Because obviously, they only lost one game after that at Georgia and finished the season 11-2. And they had an offseason where they just hit the portal and filled what looks like every need if you look at it on paper. And the way that the momentum from the win is translated now is you have a team with its highest hopes maybe in program history, maybe in a really, really long time. And it really adds to the significance of what that win meant for the program.
So I had the privilege of watching this game. I mean, I was there covering it, sort of. I was on, you know, sidebar duty or whatever you want to call it. And it was very interesting as this game continued to just, like, descend into sheer stupidity and chaos and whatever else. And it was very nice to be like, ah, you guys are sweating things out, but I'm not quite working on deadline, right?
I mean, you were sweating out, but only because you were out in the Mississippi heat.
Oh, yes, that's right. Because before this, I had an assignment of, okay, we're going to send you out into the Grove, to which you've never been before. Because my only trip to Ole Miss before that was during COVID. And obviously, yeah, not the same.
This time you got the full experience.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, all right, we're going to send you into the Grove and gauge how fans are feeling about things. Because this was right after the Alabama loss where they looked not good. So it was interesting. One of the topics of discussion was how fans were feeling about offensive coordinator Charlie Weiss Jr. And everything in that story aged like milk, but like even faster.
Mm-hmm.
So that was an interesting afternoon. But yeah, I came back from that just like drenched in sweat. It was a horrible day to not wear an undershirt.
Yes, but I'm sure the air conditioning of the Ole Miss press box, which I assume they have, was very refreshing once you set foot.
Oh, yeah. No, it was fine once I got back inside. But yeah, no, this was like the last day of September. So it was still rather warm out. So, but anyway, enough about my own personal tangents. Yeah, no, it was just, I think it was just kind of nuts from the get-go. You know, like Ole Miss comes out and drives down the field and scores a touchdown with pretty much whatever is less than minimal resistance. No resistance, really. They go 75 in 14 plays. And honestly, that is a little longer than what you would normally think from this team.
Yeah. And it was, yeah, as you mentioned with Charlie West Jr., also almost a complete 180 from how they looked against Bama, really from the get-go.
Also, it's 14 plays, 75 yards. But they also managed to fit in 14 plays in 4.5 minutes.
4.5 minutes. That feels on par for that game.
Yeah.
That might as well have happened.
You know, and then it settled down like a little bit because there were a couple of punts. And then you have the clip that has been played several times, especially in the lead up to the draft, of Dejon Anthony absolutely clobbering Jaden Daniels for a fumble.
The more I watched that play, the more I could have sworn that I heard that when Daniels was hit, I heard the sound effect that happens in Sonic when the coins just go everywhere.
Yeah, exactly. I'm pretty sure people actually made like GIFs of that on Twitter.
Yeah, I'm sure if you look and you buy like keywords like Jaden Daniels Sonic, you'll find something out there.
So, yeah, I mean, this was actually a really interesting game for me personally to go back and look on because, I'm a Commanders fan, and this was actually the second time I got to see Jaden Daniels play in person because I watched him, like, 2 weeks before that at State, mm-hmm. and it was pretty much the same thing, just, like, throwing every single fade and dropping it into buckets, just, like, every time. I mean, yes, like the supporting cast was wild, but there were some, like between those two games, there were some absolutely just like ludicrous throws.
There was one on the left sideline. I forget, it might have been the second quarter to, I forget who, but the receiver was right on the sideline with the receiver basically on top of him, and Daniels is still able to put it in really the only place he can to make that into a touchdown. Pretty incredible throw.
Yeah, no, I do remember just a handful of throws and just being like, oh my God, like how did that even like work? How do you fit that in? I mean, just so many different things. Fun fact, this was the start of a streak of games for Jaden Daniels where he would have a QBR of at least 90, and that would last through the rest of the season.
Checks out.
Keep in mind, not passer rating, QBR, which, you know, 0 to 100. So, yeah, no, he finishes this game with 414 yards through the air, 4 touchdowns through the air, and then 99 yards on the ground and a touchdown. Just, you know, it felt nice to watch a Jaden Daniels game, or at least see highlights of his, that were not against Florida, so.
I'm sure that was very refreshing until Florida went to LSU and he did what he does.
Yeah, no, it was just like every time that there was a, you know, just like go back and watch, you know, like when Jane Daniels gets picked, like all the highlights are from like the Florida games, both last year and the year before.
Those are always interesting games, LSU Florida.
Yeah, yeah, but that's not what we're here to talk about. We are here to talk about Ole Miss and LSU. But yeah, it was just, I mean, it never hit the brakes at any point, really. Once it got to the top of the hill, it just kind of snowballed from there and just got progressively dumber. You know, where it's, I think maybe the dumbest play I saw was sometime in the second half. I think it was the third quarter. Dart is like getting sacked, and then in the process of it, he just hands the ball off to Judkins, and it goes for like a 4-yard gain instead of a, you know, 7-yard loss on a sack. And it just got, you know, it just kept going from there.
Yeah. I think there was one instance that, because I was watching a highlight reel that ESPN put up this morning, and even with as much of the scoring and the on-field action as it conveyed, you wonder if it conveyed enough of what happened in the game, because if I remember correctly, there were also instances where fans were throwing something onto the field after a call. You could probably elaborate on that more than I can as the guy who was there.
Yeah, I didn't really remember it until I saw it back on the clip, or at least of, you know, I went back and watched the whole game. But yeah, it was on an LSU touchdown where could have been a catch, could have, you know, they went with catch because that's what they had on the field, close enough. I don't really disagree. But yeah, that's what it looked like, was fans throwing like bottles and disagreeing with that, which is never good. Yeah, no, and it's kind of funny that we bring up the fans because, you know, at the end of the night on the field, so.
Yeah, pretty cool field storming to watch.
Which, you know, I always feel like, I don't know, I feel like the one of the lamest rules the SEC has is that it fines teams for field stormings, and it's just like, come on, man.
Yeah, and look, are they pretty all over the place? Yes, but they're also what made college football special, and you would think the SEC would understand that, but I digress.
Yeah, no, it just seems like anytime this happens, athletic departments are like, yeah, okay, whatever, we don't care.
Just write them the check and keep moving.
Exactly. Now, and then you could just use that clip for recruiting and marketing for the rest of time.
Oh, yeah. Those photos are going to look great within the facility walls.
Yeah, no. I mean, how much come to the SIP content can you get out of that? A lot.
Oh, yeah. More than we will know.
But, yeah, I mean, what were some of the highlights of this game for you?
Well, for me, probably just the way that, you know, this was obviously a huge game for Trey Harris, and I'm not just saying that because of the last play that he had, but we talk about it all the time with metrics, and one of the most popular being yards after catch, but to me, or I guess yards after contact if you're a running back, so to make it interchangeable for the sake of this, just seeing how much of yards after contact slash catch that Ole Miss had was pretty remarkable, and just a pretty big testament to how potent that offense was, because, you know, somebody would, you'd see a guy run a 5-yard in and make it a 20-yard gain or something along those lines. And that was really cool to see. And it was really awesome seeing that back and forth the entire time.
Yeah, no, the tackling in this game was non-existent.
No, yeah, it was. But also, and it kind of brings up another point, is like, did Pete Golden get a lot of flack for this game? Yes, and he should have. But after that, he at least gave Ole Miss's defense more of an identity that, again, goes back to the momentum built off of it because, you know, with all the guys, he got Prince from Florida. He got Walker Nolan, just being able to get those guys. And I think you could argue that a lot of it started with that game because, yeah, they won, but I think even so, people wanted Pete Golding out of town for allowing 49 points. And, yeah, it was LSU, but it was 49 points at home. And it feels like ever since that game, he was really able to lock in, for lack of better words, and really be able to build something heading into a 2024 season that a lot of fans are excited for.
Yeah, no, the offensive numbers from this game are stupid. Just absolutely ridiculous. Just, you know, Ole Miss casually putting up 706 yards on an SEC opponent at home. I mean, LSU was right there at 637, but I mean, it was just Ole Miss had 317 yards on the ground, which is, you know, given how the Ole Miss ground game went this year, you know, the highs were high.
Yeah, there's that yards after contact.
You know, but I think also this game is a nice little preview of what happens if, you know, Ulysses Bentley IV gets carries this year.
100%. He had the, was it first or second touchdown of the game where he was just able to...
Second, I think.
Yeah, the second touchdown of the game. Him being able to outrun about four LSU defensive backs to be able to get to the end zone. I do reiterate that the loss of Quinshon Judkins was big, but if Ulysses Bentley can build off of the year that he had last year and be able to make that into something more consistent, then they'll be able to do without Judkins just fine.
Yeah, no, I think what got me about Bentley in this game was just the burst that he had at times. I mean, that touchdown was ridiculous. I mean, he goes 0-80 in no time flat.
Oh, yeah, and that's a really valuable trait to have in a running back.
I feel like you see that a lot with, you know, kind of the second running back on the depth chart, you know, fewer carries, more burst. But yeah, I think, you know, you sort of mentioned it earlier, but I feel like one of the other big things from this game is just the sheer amount of, like, NFL level talent at the skill positions in this game.
100%. And we could be proven even more. That could be proven even more depending on how guys like Neighbors and Daniels do, and Brian Thomas, depending on how well he gets things going in Jacksonville this season.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and then on Ole Miss, you've also got, you know, like Trey Harris, who probably is going to be a pretty touted prospect at some point.
Yeah, definitely, especially if he can keep having games like that and just being able to take a game over when he needs to, because, you know, that's an invaluable trait no matter where you go.
Yeah, so I was going to say that this was the Trey Harris game, except for the fact that he probably had a better game against Texas A&M. Later in the year, but I mean, he still finishes this game with 8 catches, 153 yards, and a touchdown. So
yeah, I the more I look through this game, I see that there were 5 punts in this game. Does that number feel high to you?
It's more so I'm like, I don't know where there was time for that.
I guess the highlight reels left a couple of areas out, I suppose. But yeah, it's just given the score, if you look at the score, you'd think 5 punts for a game that went 55-49 definitely feels like it's surprisingly high.
Well, 2 of them were in the first quarter.
Ah, yeah, that probably explains it.
So, yeah, no, they had back-to-back punts in the first quarter and then were like, never again.
Yeah, I guess I never looked at it that way.
There were 2 of them in the second half.
Ah, okay, that checks out.
So, the second half goes LSU touchdown, Ole Miss field goal, LSU touchdown, Ole Miss touchdown, LSU punt, Ole Miss on downs, LSU touchdown, Ole Miss touchdown, LSU punt, Ole Miss touchdown, end of game.
Yeah, that feels about right.
And by end of game, I mean near LSU touchdown.
Yeah, which was about maybe an inch off the wide receiver's hand for what would have been at least the game-tying score.
You know, let me tell you, this was sort of what I thought Ole Miss football was before I moved here, because I was like, I just feel like, you know, every year, you know, kind of coming in, I was like, well, okay, well, what do I know about Ole Miss? Well, they score a lot of points and they give up a lot of points. If they do less of the latter, they'll be fine. Probably an outdated stereotype of Ole Miss football, but for 1 week, it was not.
Yeah, it fit that week, and you must have been a little bit surprised the week before when they only put up 10 points.
You sort of figured with Alabama, it would be, you know, like a couple of the Ole Miss-Alabama games in the past where it was first 1-40 wins.
Yeah, feels like it.
But yeah, I remember after that game, Lane said something like he was getting like, sort of flashbacks to the 2020 team, you know. I'm trying to find it, but yeah, no, that was a very difficult game to write about, because it was like, well, we could just write about a bunch of numbers and just call it a day, because it was very, very stupid.
Well, those numbers told a pretty incredible story, as we've spoken about, and as is up there on djournal.com. I think two pieces by Michael Katz, one that came not long after the game and one that came recently. The one that was recently was in the Year in Review, which you can find on djournal.com, which tabbed that one as the game of the year, rightfully so. And there was one not long after about just the significance of it and how it just kind of looked like the beginning of the end for a lot of narrative surrounding Ole Miss at the time.
You know, that was definitely the first sign of like this year is like different.
It is. And, you know, if, you know, obviously Ole Miss is looking at this as potentially the building block for what could be really a historic season.
The quote was, this was like our COVID identity right here. Couldn't stop anybody.
Yeah, but they were able to stop them just enough when it mattered most.
I was going
to
say, yeah, that's what matters. You just need to come up with more stops than the other team, right?
Right.
So, but yeah, I mean, I feel like, you know, when you looked at that schedule last year, you were like, well, between Georgia, Alabama, and LSU, and I suppose also Texas A&M, but, you know, you sort of look at it and you go, well, you need at least one of those to do something interesting and make a New Year's Six game. And they did that, you know. So, I don't know. I just feel like this was like the big win that this team really needed.
It was. And I think in that win, you saw a lot of the stuff that, you know, we'd come to hear a lot more of as the season went on, like how these guys have really played a lot together, they've grown together, they've gotten better at handling adversity together, and just kind of resulted in, was it the first 11-win season in program history?
I believe so, yes.
Yep, that being as historic as it is.
But yeah, I also have to credit Lane for a couple of fourth down attempts. Like their first touchdown in this game was on fourth down. And I will always appreciate that because kicking field goals inside like the 5-yard line is for cowards.
Yep, especially these days. And I really like the play design for that one too, and the way that Jackson Dart went about that. You know, he didn't rush to do one particular thing right off the bat. He took his time and then found a wide open running back pretty much in the end zone. It was well played, well called, well executed.
I was saying, it looked to me like it was sort of like a double pick in the end zone and then just, you know, get the running back out behind it.
Yeah, at the very least, some kind of deceptive thing, kind of where a few wide receivers go one way in order to clear room for a guy out of the backfield to go where they were.
And then I also really do appreciate a perfectly well-run mesh. So, yeah, when that was later on. But, yeah, no, I always have to give credit where credit's due on fourth down conversions, because I always feel like fourth down discourse is very one-sided and that we only do it when it backfires. And it did backfire once for Ole Miss in this game. They did have a turnover on downs in the second half on a 4th and 5 at the LSU 45. That turned into an LSU touchdown. But in fairness, I think any forfeit of possession in this game was going to turn into a touchdown.
Yeah, it was one of those games.
So, you know, when the other team goes 55 yards in 4 plays, I think you've got more problems than what you did on fourth down.
Yep, it was just to drive home the point of why people wanted Pete Golding out of town. Just putting up that kind of drive and that kind of in that high leverage of a game was one of them.
Yeah, but like, if they ever move on from Pete Golding, what are they going to do without my, like, 2 a.m. shark emojis?
That's a very good question. It would be, and maybe that's what they considered. I like to think it is.
But, yeah, no, I do remember LSU going on that drive at the end of the game and being just outside of field goal range, being just outside of, like, reasonable touchdown range. And the fact that that was set up by a horse collar penalty was funny. And then there were, I think, like one or I think there were two false starts.
Yep. It was one on Neighbors before the missed touchdown.
Yeah, that one was, yes, a false start on your wide receiver. Yes. There were a couple of like near picks, you know, just like a bunch of nonsense. But on the penalties, I think Ole Miss had like 120 yards of penalties in this game.
Oh boy.
I was making a mental note on like, I feel like every flag was an Ole Miss holding penalty. But anyway, I just remember like them going down the field, and I was like, oh my God, you know, just like, I remember like on the, like we were past the verge of losing our minds. I think it was just like, of course, you know, like, of course there is a last gasp drive because this game, you know, the ride never stops.
The carbonated drinks in the press box can only get you so far.
Yeah, no, it was just a weird, dumb, anything goes kind of night. To me, if you could like bottle up college football in like an essence, this game would be in there.
Yeah, 100%. Let me ask about this. The one you mentioned, how there were a couple of missed intercepts, at least one, because I saw the one where the ball hit the guy's torso and went through his arms before hitting the ground. Just what was the mood in the stadium when that happened? What was the mood in the press box, the stadium, just from what you gathered?
I think there was a sort of, I cannot believe this game is still going. Right? Because, oh, like, man. You see that and you're like, oh, all right, we can go home now.
And then down it goes.
No. Yeah, and then there was another one, like the play after, where he throws it towards the goal line, and it's like an LSU player sandwiched between two Ole Miss defenders, and it somehow goes completely uncaught. And it's, yeah, no, it was some kind of night.
Oh, I can only imagine.
But yeah, I don't know. Just any other notes, any other observations, questions?
It's one that you tell your kids about, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I was always, I was a little jealous because I was never at a game where people stormed the field. Maybe part of that is because it's just one of those, like, you know, at the University of Florida, we don't do that, you know, right? Like, there's no grand occasion where that's appropriate, right? Because the expectation is always to be the good team. Does that ever happen? No, but, you know, like, I think the closest one to that was Florida versus LSU in 2018, but, you know, nobody storms the field for that one. So, yeah, I'm always a little jealous when I see, like, students, like, flooding the field, because I'm like, man, that has to be a great time.
Oh, yeah, especially if you're a student there. It's got to be amazing.
That's certainly once in a lifetime. Sometimes you just have to get really lucky with when you go to college.
I can attest to that 100%.
You know, so, well, what do you mean by that?
Oh, well, I guess kind of on a more personal, I did not go to a big D1 college like these are. I did go to Ithaca College in New York. I guess to keep a long story short, We have a big rivalry with Cortland. That is our kind of end of the year rivalry. And my senior year was the 150th anniversary of college football. So they put the game at MetLife Stadium, and it was the highest selling and it was the most attended Division III football game in history, until that record was broken when they had that same game at Yankee Stadium 3 years later.
Why does Yankee Stadium play host to so many non baseball events?
I don't know. I think it's just like the historic thing, like, oh, it's Yankee Stadium.
Except it's not historic. They built the thing in like 2009.
That's another thing. I feel like it's a lot of the name and just like what it kind of represents and just kind of tying it back to things. Because you're right. It's not even the original venue. I don't know.
It's really more like, it's just really more me just being mad that NYCFC still plays there for some reason.
They'll be out of there in no time. They're working on that new stadium. Don't worry.
So, Anyway. Yeah, no, just anything else you want to add?
No, those were all my big points.
Cool. Yeah, no, I think I'm out of big points too. But yeah, no, I just wanted to maybe do a little bit of experimenting with this, and you know, I think this went pretty well.
Yeah, no better game to experiment with than this one.
Cool. Well, you can follow James on Twitter at JSMurphyMedia. You can follow me on Twitter at BFerrell727. If you want more of our Ole Miss or Mississippi State coverage, feel free to check out our lineup of newsletters at djournal.com/newsletters. And if you want to join the conversation with other fans, please check out our Mississippi State and Ole Miss sports discussion groups on Facebook. Yeah, so I think that's going to be about time for us. Thank you for listening, and have a good one.